Cascadia and the edge of the world, Euphemet presents Night Drift with Jim Perry.
From the hinterlands, concealed by fog, at the intersection of society and strange, this is an interview series about the unknown and our relationship to it. Produced by the documentary podcast series Euphemet, here we commune and wander through the big wonder with guests who are thinkers, explorers, experiencers of the phenomena that is on the edge of it all. This is Night Drift, and I'm Jim Perry. On a secluded ranch near Sedona, Arizona, strange events mysteriously began in 1992. What does it portend for us all? Tonight, guest Tom Dongo tells us all about this place called Bradshaw Ranch. We'll also share his 30 years of investigating UFOs, alien bases, Bigfoot, remote viewing, and so much more. I've been really looking forward to talking with Tom for a very long time. So this is going to be a really fun and fascinating chat. And we'll jump right into that conversation in just a minute, actually. But I wanted to let you know, of course, here to start off the program, you can join the conversation tonight. Just email me, jim@euphemet.com, and use hashtag nightdrift on Twitter. I've been getting such heartwarming, scary, fascinating emails from you, so keep that up. Reach out. It's an adventure every time I open my inbox lately. It's wonderful, so thank you for that. Our guest, Tom Dongo, is the author of 8 books and is recognized as one of America's leading authorities on the paranormal. He's a UFO ET researcher, remote viewer, and over the course of many years, been a key lecturer at numerous U.S. national and international conferences. He studied at the Berkeley International Psychic Institute in Santa Cruz, California, and has spent the last 30 years in the greater Sedona, Arizona area, which is known as one of the premier UFO hotspots of the world. Tom, welcome so much to Night Drift, my friend. And Tom is unmuting himself here. You know, Sedona is a place that's mystified me for many years. I've been to Sedona. As many of you know that have listened to this program for a long time, I did a documentary down there. I did a documentary down there with a former UFO lawyer, Peter Gersten, in which I had to climb a Red Rock Mountain in order to interview him. That was the deal. Climb the Red Rock Mountain with me. Become a member of the top of the Bell Rock Club. So my producer and myself, my producer at the time, Chelsea Weber Smith of American Hysteria, we went out to Sedona and we showed up at this mountain at, I think it was probably 6:30 in the morning, 7 in the morning. The sun was coming up, and to stand below Bell Rock and look up at it was awe-inspiring. It was awe-inspiring, and in a way that can almost, it's hard to even find words for it, except for that it seemed like it could be impossible. That it could be impossible to scale this thing. Yet, I essentially made it close to the top. There was one more level that I just could not bring myself to, which you had to straddle between two sides of the mountain. But since Chelsea is a spider monkey, they were able to get up with no problem, and thus an incredible conversation with Peter Gersten. You can go back on the Euphemet feed right now, and you can listen to that. You can check that out. And through it, we talk a lot about Sedona as a place, as a source of energy, as a source of inspiration for so many people. Now, I know there is this preconceived sort of, you know, notion of it being all about crystals and tourists, and that's there, right? But as so is the case with any mysterious location where people find out about it and look to make a life there, sometimes that includes going there and opening a crystal shop. Other times it includes going there and leading free tours up Red Rock Mountains. Other times it means going there and devoting your life to studying what this phenomena really is. The real stuff, and figuring out maybe what it means, but maybe how it changes you. If at the end of the day, Sedona is one thing. It changes people. And that's one of the reasons I'm so excited to talk with Tom. Because, you know, we may learn something about how this place changes people. And in particular, one spot, Bradshaw Ranch. It's a ranch that, if you're familiar with Skinwalker Ranch, has some comparisons. I know another place that I have been. And so it would be great to kind of compare notes on the Bradshaw Ranch where I've not been and Skinwalker. And what are these places, these hot spots? Are they all tied together in some sort of way? Maybe we'll never know, but maybe, just maybe, we'll get to the bottom of how some of that feels. Now, as we're trying to reach Tom, we're going to go ahead and go to a break. So stay right with us as we get Tom back on the line. This is Night Drift. I'm Jim Perry. After this, we go to Bradshaw Ranch, and we also discover a little bit about Tom's background. And, you know, I'm so fascinated about what brings people to these areas. I know it wouldn't take much for me. Sometimes you just gotta follow the strange. And sometimes you go to a place and then there is the strange. We'll find out more when we come back here on Night Drift.
On Spotify and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thank you.
listening to Night Drift with Jim Perry on Alternative Talk 1150 AM KKNW Seattle. Now, here again is Jim.
This is Night Drift. I'm Jim Perry. There's a new perk for Euphemet patrons, an ad-free Euphemet podcast feed, and you can use it wherever you listen to podcasts. Go to euphemet.com and click the top banner to become a patron today. Unlock ad-free shows and access to the occasional hangout. We're going to do another one of those very soon, actually. And thank you, of course, to those that have already subscribed for that. I also want to thank real quick our sponsor, BetterHelp. Just as it suggests in my host read ad, they've become an important part of my mental health. If you can, support this program by supporting yourself and trying out this incredible talk therapy service. And most importantly, thank you for listening tonight. Now, tonight, we're going to be exploring some very mysterious places, all centered around, well, I guess maybe I'll call the whole place a vortex of some sort, Sedona, Arizona. And tonight, there's no better person to talk to about this than researcher, writer, investigator Tom Dongo, who is our guest tonight. Tom, welcome so much to Night Drift.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Great to be here.
Yeah, so, you know, as I was explaining in the first of the show, you know, I've been to Sedona. I'm friendly with Peter Gersten. I've hiked up Bell Rock. I've heard some of the stories of vortex activity and UFO activity. But really, at this point in time, this place seems almost almost notorious for its UFO activity. And I wonder if, to just set the table, if you can take us to Sedona, Arizona, and describe what people are experiencing there.
Well, you know, I was in Sedona 33 years. I'm in Cottonwood now. I've been down here. Cottonwood's only about 20 miles from Sedona.
Okay.
But yeah, incidentally, this is the 71st worldwide radio show I've been on. I figure I've talked to about 100 million people now, so I'm getting I'm getting pretty seasoned.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the whole thing around here, this is unique here. I'm doing a thing with the History Channel right now. We're doing a new filming on the Bradshaw Ranch. Mm. And they it's going to be called Beyond Skinwalker. And so I'm heavily involved in that right now. They're going to start filming. They're going to be here for 20 days, which is incredible for a camera crew. I know Brandon Fugel and some of the Skinwalker guys. So I'm very familiar with what goes on there. And of course, I'm very familiar with Bradshaw Ranch, because I've written two books. There's actually been three books written about the Bradshaw Ranch. So, I know most of the world's best paranormal researchers, UFO, and unfortunately many of them have passed on. The old timers way back, Bob Dean and Colonel Wendell Stevens and some of these other guys. But so I'm well versed on a lot of this stuff that goes on around the world. And the Skinwalker Ranch is very similar but different than the Bradshaw Ranch. It's there's really nothing negative that's ever happened on the Bradshaw Ranch. Some really scary stuff. I could spend the next 2 hours talking about stories that would really make your hair stand on end. But the difference is there's nothing harmful ever happened on the Bradshaw Ranch. I spent 4.5 years there, 3 or 4 nights a week with Linda and Bob Bradshaw.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and so I still say to this day that Linda Bradshaw and Bob saw a UFO land in the apple orchard behind the ranch. That was enough for him. It came over the top of the hill. He was on national TV talking about this in an interview, and Bob was pretty much of a old redneck Arizona cowboy. I mean, he's a good good guy, but. But anyway, that was enough. That was enough for Bob. That disc. I mean, this was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The disc came over the hill, and it had about 50 white orbs with it, and they all landed together in the apple orchard, only about 100 yards away. And so, that was it for Bob. He says, "I've had enough." So Linda could not get him to come out. She'd go in and say, "Bob, you've got to come out and see this. You've got to." And he wouldn't. He'd stay in the house and watch TV. He'd had enough that first time. So.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, yeah, and I don't blame him. I mean, that's pretty extreme. You know, so what do you think the relationship between Bradshaw and Sedona is geographically? Do you think something is happening there where that stretch of land is affected by some mysterious or invisible force?
Well, you know, there's something here that, you know, I've been at this longer than anybody else, you know, alive, and I don't understand it. I really don't. The more I think I know, the less I understand.
Mm-hmm.
It there's something extremely mysterious here, and there's something on the Bradshaw Ranch still there, we had camera crews out there every week, BBC, Universal Studios, you name it, NBC. So every week we had a camera crew out there, and we Linda and I were poor. I mean, we just had basic 35mm equipment and a very, very poor Panasonic camcorder. It was one of the first ones ever made, and some binoculars and 3.5 million candle power spotlights. So that's all we had. But we needed scientific. We practically begged the camera crews, you know, to go back and ask their boss to give us some scientific equipment, because we knew it was going to end at the Bradshaw Ranch. It always does. And it ended in the San Luis Valley in Colorado at the same time.
Mm.
And the stuff that was going on in the San Luis Valley was just as scary and as strange as the Bradshaw Ranch, but it was different again. Because Chris O'Brien and Creston used to go back and forth and compare notes. But it always ends. So, but we begged these guys to go back, and they would have film footage. We told them we would give you full rights to whatever you get, whatever you film, and just loan us a cameraman and a camera. You know, those
right.
cameras back then were $100,000. You know, they weighed about 30 pounds. They were,
yeah.
But they would film in total whatever the human eye could see. They would film in the darkness. That's what we needed.
Well, that's really interesting, because in your book, I think you suggest that, you know, in one of your books, that cameras, film or digital, just have an ability to see what the human eye just can't see.
Exactly. There's a video. I don't know if I still have it, but I had a video to prove that. The human eye can only say, let's say 6 inches, or let's go for 2 feet in front of us. But a camera can see 3 feet above and 3 feet below when your eyes can't see. So there could be somebody, especially with flash photography, you can take a flash picture and there's something right in front of you that your eyes can't see, but the camera can see it. Linda and I, we have three or four friends now that are real serious researchers that are going out to the ranch a couple of times a week, you know, and I've only been out there once in the last year and a half. Because I've been out there so many, many times, but they're getting some interesting stuff. And incidentally, they found up on the ridge above the just recently found high-tech camera equipment. One camera was aimed straight up, and the other was aimed straight at the ranch. Hmm. And a friend of my Jeremy's said he has somebody, a friend in the military, and he showed him the pictures of what Jeremy took up on the hill, and the guy in the military said that is very, very expensive military equipment. So it's got a razor wire fence around it. What the heck's it doing there? You know, what are you looking for? It's something. They're looking for something.
Okay, I mean, evidence that some sort of organized group, whether it be military or something else, is very interested in this place and is researching it actively. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they know something's there, and they want to film it. They a lot of times they'll suspect something, but they can't verify it or prove it. The Bradshaw Ranch, we never had any military on the ranch that we know of. We never saw any, but there was plenty of military activity around, and there were whole convoys of big trucks this probably happened half a dozen times in 30 years. The whole convoy, 20 or 30 tractor trailers we would be seeing going into the canyons, but they never came out. I actually interviewed a couple of these people. Usually what I end up doing is a second person or third person that witnessed this sort of thing or talked to somebody. That's usually what I have to end up with. But in this case, I talked to people that were eyewitnesses, and they waited. One guy waited all night, and they never came back out. So where the heck are they going? And three women about 20 years ago are coming back from Cottonwood, going to Sedona, and they thought it was a dance or some kind of football. They were stadium lights in a big circle out there. So they drove up the dirt road. It was road 252, went halfway between Cottonwood and Sedona. They came to a gate. There's never been a gate on that road. There's usually heavy traffic. There has been for 50 years. A lot of people live back there. So anyway, they got out and walked. Nobody stopped them. And they came to a... I interviewed two of these women, and they were normal people. They weren't drunk, and they said, "We weren't drinking, and we weren't drinking, weren't smoking anything." And they watched these tractor trailers going into the ground. And what they said was, what was really strange was the ramp they were going into the ground on. And this was out in the middle of the desert. It wasn't back in the canyons. So they stayed as long as they dared to, then they beat it out of there. But they said, it's one thing for tractor trailers driving into the ground, but it was the ramp. I never did get a chance to ask him, what do you mean about the ramp? What was so strange about a ramp? Hmm. They said that was the really strange thing about it.
That's fascinating. And so, let's. I'm just thinking about this, right, Tom? It's so strange that so many people each year, they go to Sedona because they have some sort of mystical inclination, right? And they're there and they visit the crystal shops, and maybe they get a psychic reading for the first time. And then, at the same time, this phenomenon is happening, if not in the city itself and not in the town itself, but right outside of it in the canyons. Do you ever walk around that community and look at folks and go like, if you only knew half of it?
I actually wrote a book about it. It's out of print. It's my best book, my favorite book, but when COVID hit, my publisher took such a financial hit, she couldn't finish reprinting it. It's called The Quest. And I did that. I wrote a book about the experiences that people had, and I interviewed 100 people for that book. And it's too bad, it's a fabulous book, but I've had offers to reprint it, but it's just too messy, too complicated. Once I get started on these stories, we're going to be here for the next week.
That's okay. It's about it, So please, feel free.
I'll tell you a story. And this 100 witnesses saw this. If I get too far off the track, remind me, because I do this all the time. Even when I'm talking to hundreds of people in an audience, I said, does somebody remember what I was talking about?
No problem.
So this actually happened. About 20 years ago, a creature ran, it was a humanoid creature, ran through downtown Sedona, all the way through downtown Sedona. Sedona's not very big. You can drive through it in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this creature ran way faster than any human could ever run, they said. And like I say, 100 people saw this, they witnessed it. But they just have. I interviewed a woman that I was talking to a woman. She said, that creature came face to face with me down at the creature had run off the main street. And it was on a lower parking lot, and she said that thing was 5 feet from me, and it was not human. It wasn't even close to human. It had very big, like half dollar sized black eyes, and it looked terrified. We looked at each other for a couple of seconds. And it was nothing on it was human, not even close. So that's one of the strange things that happen around here, and it's not unusual. And I've been asked hundreds of times, why is it, Sedona? And it's probably the iron oxide, the magnetism in the rocks. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. So you know, or something mysterious that's here that, you know, that nobody really understands. I've been researching it for 30 years. I still haven't been able to really figure it out.
Does it ever give you pause when people present themselves as knowing sort of like way too much or making, you know, sort of very declarative statements about why these things could be happening?
I have a saying, if they claim to know everything, in actuality, they know nothing.
That's good, Tom. I like that. You know, I'm really curious. Was it the anomalous that brought you there in the first place? How did you end up in Sedona, and how did you end up being the resident, you know, expert investigator there?
Well, you know, I was a member of the Tibetan Foundation in Santa Cruz, California, and so I had friends that lived in Sedona. I had no idea what Sedona looked like. I thought it was flat sand, like Phoenix, cactuses, and a few snakes. But so I thought, well, heck, I just was getting really tired of California, the BMW. You know, they judge you by how much money you make, and I just got real tired of that. So I figured I'm gonna quit my job and got my van all fixed up to sleep in, and I took off for Sedona. No idea what it looked like. So I was driving in. I came down from Flagstaff down Oak Creek Canyon, and I thought, wow, this is not exact. This is pretty wild. You know, this these red rocks and all this. And so I said, yeah, that's pretty cool. So I've been here 35 years now in this area.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, and when you're going down that road from Flagstaff, it's like you enter into a different reality once you pull through. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen Red Rocks before, give me a break.
Yeah. Well, there is a level about two-thirds of the way down Oak Creek Canyon. You ask anybody, and they'll tell you. It's like driving into an energy area, like a ocean or something. It's like driving right into it. At a certain point, everybody feels it. There's an energy change. It's dramatic. So it's very common.
Do you think has there been reports that you've heard of people mentioning things like the vortex energy and the vortex, and in relation to UFO or craft sightings or even non-human intelligence?
Well, no, not really directly. When the first two and a half years I lived in Sedona, I did vortex tours. So I had an opportunity to study. And incidentally, there are more than five or six vortexes. There's hundreds of them. They're back in it. I call them energy areas. They're back in the canyons. If you're energy sensitive, you can find them. They're very easy to find. But I had a chance to watch people, and the vortexes affect women dramatically. I've seen them shake and cry and that sort of thing, not intentional, when they get into a vortex. So. The unfortunate thing is now there's millions of people that are coming here now. There's so many people that are going to these places. It really is kind of diffusing the energy. I'm not trying to discourage any tourists, but
sure.
The amount of tourists that are coming here is phenomenal. A lot of things around Sedona are overwhelmed. Where there used to be three or four cars parking, now there's 200.
Yeah. Oh my God. Tom, listen, I understand what you're saying too, because I think about it within my own work, you know, being a documentarian and then hosting this show. When the topics of these stories are location specific, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of a bittersweet thing, because you want to educate people about these things, and you want to give people obviously the chance, the opportunity to experience them, but you don't want to ruin it either, frankly.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I do what I do is whatever I talk about, I can prove it. You know, I'm not just blowing smoke up my ears like a lot of researchers are. If I talk about something, I can prove it. So, you know, because what I've experienced, I want other people to experience it if it's not, if it's, you know, only through my books.
Right.
But I was told recently that, and this really blew me away, that the whole thing on the Skinwalker, the whole Skinwalker thing with Bigelow, the billionaire Bigelow, was a result of my book, Merging Dimensions.
Wow.
Yeah, the whole thing is as a result of what they read in my book, and going from there. I don't want to mention any names, but so I really feel proud of that. I really do. Merging Dimensions is my best selling book, and it's been it totally describes the Bradshaw Ranch, everything that happened there, and the new history channel. Program is going to be based on Merging Dimensions. Everything that they're going to do is based on Merging Dimensions. So that's going to be fun.
Well, that sounds really exciting. And really exciting, Tom. And of course, when you're talking about proof, you know, in Merging Dimensions, you have, you know, over 100 photographs from the sites and the events there. So some of them incredibly stunning, you know. So people should definitely check that out.
Yeah.
Before we go to break, I'd like to ask you a little bit about, you know, before you found yourself in Sedona, you studied at the Berkeley International Psychic Institute. What was it that brought you to that space? How are you basically ushered into this world of the anomalous?
You know, it's got to be a past, you know, before life agreement. And that's the only thing I can, is that, you know, 100 times I've said, why me? Things just happen.
Yeah.
And just have me put in the right place at the right time. Or I see something that it's and I have strange abilities. I mean, I can see into a human body like an x-ray machine. I don't do this for a living. I've cured cancer. I tried curing a girl with 4-stage cancer, and I did.
Oh my gosh.
See if I could do it. She was dying. So, and then I can Maureen St. Germain and I teach remote viewing. And I was born with a master level of remote viewing. I can do a lot of things that the best remote viewers can't do, because I know them. I know some of these Ingo Swan, Russell Targ trained remote viewers, government remote viewers.
Sure.
And some of them are my best friends, my good friends. And so I know what they know, and they know what I know. And one of them said, your hit rate is far better than the Swan Targ method, the coordinate method.
Yeah.
And incidentally, that's what Maureen and I teach. Maureen teaches the military version, and I teach the Tom Dongo version.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it works fantastic. It really it's kind of it's really fun and exciting. Watching people learning how to remote view, because I wish I could give it away to millions of people. Overnight, this world would be a different place if people could see the things like I do. And I'm not just blowing smoke up my ears. I can prove it.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, in some weird way, it seems like all roads lead to remote viewing. Especially in my most recent conversation. So it's fascinating. And I mean, listen, I think to have the abilities that you believe you have and being in the space that you are is incredible. And I want to ask you more about that after we go to this quick break. This is Night Drift. I'm Jim Perry. We're here with Tom Dongo, and we're talking Sedona, Arizona. We're talking Bradshaw Ranch. And we're talking remote viewing now. And I believe we're probably going to get into all sorts of more topics and trouble. So stick with us here on Night Drift. We'll be right back after this.
Follow Night Drift with Jim Perry on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes. Jim Perry on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle. Now, here again is Jim.
I'm Jim Perry, and this is Night Drift. Our guest, Tom Dongo. In Merging Dimensions, he mentions this story about, I believe it's in Merging Dimensions, or maybe it's an interview that I heard him on, because he's done a million of them. He mentions Secret Mountain and Secret Mountain burning. And to me, that sounds like a great band name. Secret Mountain Burning. That's something. So I'm going to ask Tom about that in a second. You might have noticed that we haven't had a new Euphemet feature drop recently, and that is because we're actually in the middle of a really big edit for a story like none that we have covered before. I'll be announcing that very soon, so thank you for your patience. Now, our guest Tom... over 100 actual photographs of incredible events, otherworldly beings, strange flying craft, and unexplained light anomalies are contained in Tom Dongo's book, Merging Dimensions. There's an updated version, I believe, on Amazon now. You should definitely check it out. And Tom, welcome back to Night Drift, my friend.
Yeah, my pleasure. This is fun.
Yeah, it's very fun. I could talk to you forever. This is just so fascinating to me, and I can't wait to get back down to Sedona at some point in time, chat with my friend Peter Gersten, and then come and say hi to you and buy you a coffee, man.
Yeah, great.
So, Bradshaw Ranch, you were there for 4 years.
Yeah.
Listen, I think in any spot, any hot spot, any anomalous investigation, you know, you're looking at individuals who are lucky if they get a weekend to do researching in certain places. But you had 4 years with one of the owners of the property there. Can you explain a little bit about how you first learned about Bradshaw Ranch, though?
Well, you know, about the third year I lived in Sedona, I kept hearing stories about the Bradshaw Ranch. I didn't know anybody that was connected to it. And I thought I would love to go. I was a pretty well-known researcher then. And I said, I would just love to go out there. And shortly after that, I got a letter from Linda Bradshaw. She said, could I ask you to please come out to the ranch there's some strange things going on out here, and I've got photographs. I want you to see them. So, you know, it was shoe leather over the hill for me right there. I was on my way the next day out there. And so I spent four and a half years with Linda and Bob, three or four nights a week. And I spent a few stayed there all night a few times. But, you know, it's really hard to describe. Some of these camera crews, sorry, especially NBC, I really got in heavy with NBC. Long story. But anyway, you know, the things that Linda and I witnessed out there are beyond belief. And I've talked about this with some of the skinwalker guys. Even at skinwalker, I don't really think they experienced anything like Linda and I did. For instance, I'm going to this is one thing, and we would be the Bradshaws had seven dogs. If a dog wandered on the ranch, they'd keep it, and it was so they were out. Yeah,
sounds like my wife.
Yeah, they were outside dogs, and so there was all beach sand around the ranch because the ocean has come and gone here seven times.
Oh wow.
Sedona, yeah. So everything you see is ocean sediment. In fact, 1 inch is 1,000 years, and these things are thousands of feet high.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so it's a lot of history. And incidentally, if you scratch a red rock, they're white underneath. That stuff, the red is rust. It's iron oxide.
Oh, amazing.
So, yeah. So anyway, Linda and I, this was probably. If there were scary things that happened on the ranch, this was probably the biggest. We were outside with our spotlights one night, and the dogs would bury themselves in the sand in the summer to keep cool and bury themselves in the sand in the winter to keep warm. So, you know, there are just too many dogs to go in the house and all that. So at any rate, so Linda and I started hearing these strange sounds. Linda and I were both are familiar with all of the things that live in the desert, the bears, the mountain lions, the javelinas, you know, but this one, Linda and I were saying to each other, what did that sound like to you? That was kind of weird. And it kept making this grunting sound, kind of a low growling sound. And so we realized it was circling us. And, you know, we thought this is just kind of bizarre, but we had, you know, seven dogs right there, so we wouldn't worry about being attacked. But anyway, the thing, there was a dry creek bed over on that side of the ranch, and it was obviously following the dry creek bed. And at one point, all seven dogs jumped up simultaneously and ran full speed towards this noise, and then it roared like an African lion. It was we knew then it wasn't anything that it was normally out in the desert. So we thought we were going to hear dogs torn to pieces, you know, because they all ran towards this sound. That's one thing that proves that this actually happened, that the dogs attacked it, chased it, went after it. So at any rate, 15 minutes later, they came trotting back and went, dug back into the sand. So they knew the creature, but you know, wow. As it went further, the Bradshaws had horses on the north end of the ranch and horses on the south of the end of the ranch. And if you ever heard a horse scream, all these horses were screaming. I mean, it sounds just like a woman being murdered, and all the horses were making the north end and the south end were screaming. So we could tell it was down by the lower corral, and the horses were trying to kick their way out. It was two by 10 boards that were made up the corral, and they're trying to kick their way out. So we knew that thing was really close to them, whatever it was. And so we had my spotlight went dead, and Linda still had a good charge on it. So we walked down to the end of the field, as far as we dared to go. We thought it was in the trees in front of us. There was some pretty good size ash trees there, but it wasn't. It was on the hill above us, looking down at us. Just his head was sticking up over the. So I told some people yesterday, a couple of days ago about this, that the next day we left then. We didn't stick around, and the horses calmed down. So we realized that this thing, whatever it was, and it left round tracks. And the reason it took me years to figure this out, it was standing on its tiptoes. It was probably a Bigfoot standing on its tiptoes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and there were ridges. There were ridges. You know, you can see the vein ridges and the creases in the foot. I've got one photograph, and then we staked out the tracks. The tracks were 72 inches apart, and it was really impressive. We staked them out. Leonard and I staked. Got some stakes, and you can see that where this thing went down down around the corral and then disappeared. So 72 inches. I'm 6'2" and my stride is 27 inches. Unreal. This thing was 72, so it was at least 11 feet tall. Whatever it was, and it may not have been a Bigfoot, but that's one of the scariest things that ever happened out there. But we weren't hurt in any way, and it could have, whatever it was.
Yeah.
We were not hurt.
Tom, was there ever a moment that you can remember, early days, right? When you first started going out there, that you kind of looked around and was able to like take a minute for yourself and realize you were in maybe one of the strangest places on earth?
Oh yeah. And I took advantage of it too. I realized this is probably an opportunity that might only a handful of people ever on this planet ever got to experience. So I was going to make the best of it.
How did that feel like when you went home at night or went home the next morning? How did it feel to have that, sort of be bestowed upon you or find yourself in this adventure?
You know, I'll tell you something. Linda and I had a pact one night. We knew we were into something really different, really weird, really strange, and it could be really scary. We had a pact that if we were killed, we were going to push it. I mean, that's how gutsy Linda was. She was really something.
Wow.
If we got killed doing this, we were going to push it as hard as we could. Yeah, she was a gutsy woman. And we did. So we just kept at it. You know, and the funny thing is, those, whatever they were, they seemed to respect us. There was a portal where the ranch house is, about 50 feet to the south and about 20 feet in the air. There was a portal. It was probably about 30 feet across, and these things were coming through that portal, and they were probably dimensional beings, and we knew they could see us, but we couldn't see them. Linda could; she could sense them, and we could smell them. Rose smells was one, and burning sulfur and tar was another one.
Oh man, well that's a classic smell that yeah. has been accounted for millennia, right?
Yeah. But we were never, you know, we were never bothered. You know, there weren't any demons or anything. We never were bothered in any way. And sometimes that smell was over. In fact, one night I went into my van, I opened the doors of my van and went in to reload my 35 millimeter camera. And one of those things came in the van with me. You know, this sort of thing happens so often out there. What would have scared a normal person to death didn't bother us at all. It would scare the shoes off, you know, but Linda and I got so used to this stuff, and UFO activity. Just about every night I left the Bradshaw Ranch at 1 o'clock in the morning, there was a UFO somewhere. Mm. Or they'd be waiting for me. And I'd sit there on the top of the hill and I go, well, what am I going to do? I'm tired. I'm hungry. I want to go home. So I would just say the heck with it and keep going. And they would usually just blink out, disappear. And I've had them trick me a few times. I was on my way out of from the Bradshaw Ranch, and I knew there was not another ranch up there, and I'm driving along, and I say, oh, look at this! I never saw this big ranch before. Look at all the windows on it, this thing is huge. I mean, it's an enormous ranch. How come I never saw this before? Well, it wasn't a ranch; it was a UFO on the ground. They had implanted in my mind that it was a ranch. I'm going, oh, how come I never saw this before? And that was nothing. That was not unusual. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, you know. So we had the huspa to chase these things. So they respected us, I think. Oh, and I wanted to mention the The reason I went out to the Bradshaw Ranch, Linda Bradshaw and Linda Crystal in Pine Bush, New York, were the first ones to discover orbs. And there's probably half a dozen different kinds of orbs, and some of them, they're living beings. It would take me 2 hours to get into that, but some of
the, I was going to say, Tom, the last minute of the program, you're over here just dropping the mic is what you're doing. That will have to be the topic of our next chat, because I'm so fascinated by that. I want to explore orbs more, and I know some of the work that you've done in that field, some of the things that you've captured are really extraordinary, and I think will make a lot of people think a little differently about orbs. So would you come back sometime and chat with me about that?
Yeah, just let me know a couple of weeks ahead.
Absolutely. Tom, real quick, in just like 20 seconds, where can people find your work?
Amazon. You know, I at one point I was 12,000 emails behind, so I'm hard. You know, Facebook. I'm on Facebook, but I'm so swamped from every direction. I really can't. I have to really bide my time. But Facebook is one, and then all my books are on Amazon.
Great.
My website is. I've never do anything with it for years. I don't even know what's on it. So.
Yeah. Well, they can go check it out on Amazon, just like myself. And thank you so much, Tom. And thank you for listening to this. This is Night Drift with Jim Perry, an alternative talk, 1150 KKNW, Seattle. Hear the show anytime on his podcast feed, wherever you listen to them. Go to euphemet.com for more and join us next Sunday. Till then, keep looking up.
Follow Night Drift with Jim Perry on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes.
The views